welcome back to another episode of Highlighters and All-Nighters. I'm your host, Ms. Huber. Today, we're going to be reading chapters 19, 20, and 21 of Tuck Everlasting. When last we left off at chapter 18, we heard a knock at the door, and it was the man in the yellow suit. I am on page 93. Let's get started. The man in the yellow suit came into the sunlit parlor. He stood for a moment, looking around at them all, May and Miles and Jesse and Tuck, and Winnie, too. His face was without expression, but there was something unpleasant behind it that Winnie sensed at once, something that made her instantly suspicious. And yet his voice was mild when he said, "You're safe now, Winifred. I've come to take you home." "We was going to bring her back directly, ourselves," said Tuck, standing up slowly. "She ain't been in no danger." "You're Mr. Tuck, I suppose?" said the man in the yellow suit. "I am," said Tuck formally, his back straighter than usual. "Well, you may as well sit down again. You too, Mrs. Tuck. I have a great deal to say, and very little time for saying it." May sat down on the edge of the rocker, and Tuck sat too, but his eyes were narrowed. Jesse said uneasily, "Who in tarnation do you think you—" But Tuck interrupted, "Hush, boy. Let him speak his piece." "That's wise," said the man in the yellow suit. "I'll be as brief as possible." He took off his hat and laid it on the mantel, and then stood tapping his foot on the littered hearth, facing them. His face was smooth and empty. "I was born west of here," he began, "and all the time I was growing up, my grandmother told me stories. They were wild, unbelievable stories, but I believed them. They involved a dear friend of my grandmother's who married into a very odd family. Married the older of two sons, and they had two children. And it was after the children were born that she began to see that the family was odd. This friend of my grandmother's, she lived with her husband for 20 years, and strange to say, he never got any older. She did, but he didn't. And neither did his mother, or his father, or his brother. People began to wonder about that family, and my grandmother's friend decided at last that they were witches or worse. She left her husband and came with her children to live at my grandmother's house for a short while. Then she moved west. I don't know what became of her, but my mother still remembers playing with the children. They were all about the same age. There was a son and a daughter." "Anna," whispered Miles. May burst out, "You got no call to come bring us pain." And Tuff added roughly, "You got something to say? You better come to the point and say it." "There, there now," said the man in the yellow suit. He spread his long white fingers in a soothing gesture. "Hear me out. As I've told you, I was fascinated by my grandmother's stories. People who never grew older? It was fantastic. It took possession of me. I decided to devote my life to finding out if it could be true, and if so, how and why. I went to school. I went to university. I studied philosophy, metaphysics, even a little medicine. None of it did me any good. Oh, there are ancient legends, but nothing more. I nearly gave it up. It began to seem ridiculous and a waste of time. And I went home. My grandmother was very old by then. I took her a present one day, a music box. And when I gave it to her, it reminded her of something. The woman, the mother of the family that didn't grow old, she had a music box." May's hand went to the pocket of her skirt. Her mouth opened, and then she shut again with a snap. "That music box played a very particular tune," the man in the yellow suit went on. "My grandmother's friend and her children, Anna, was that the daughter's name? They'd heard it so often that they knew it by heart. They taught it to my mother during the short time they lived in the house. We talked about it then, all those years afterward, my mother, my grandmother, and I. My mother was able to remember the melody, finally. She taught it to me. That was nearly 20 years ago now, but I kept it in my head. It was a clue." The man in the yellow suit folded his arms and rocked a little. His voice was easy, almost friendly. "During those 20 years," he said, "I worked at other things. But I couldn't forget the tune or the family that didn't grow older. They haunted my dreams. So a few months ago, I left my home and I started out to look for them, following the route they were said to have taken when they left their farm. No one I asked along the way knew anything. No one had heard of them. No one recognized their name. But two evenings ago, I heard that music box. I heard that very tune, and it was coming from the Foster's wood. And the next morning early, I saw the family at last taking Winifred away. I followed and I heard their story, every word. May's face drained of color. Her mouth hung open, and Tuck said hoarsely, "What you gonna do?" The man in the yellow suit smiled. "The Fosters have given me their wood," he said, "in exchange for bringing Winifred home. I was the only one who knew where she was, you see. So it was a trade. Yes, I followed you, Mrs. Tuck, and then I took your horse and went directly back." The tension in the parlor was immense. Winnie found that she could scarcely breathe. It was true, then. Or was the man who stood there crazy, too? "Horse thief!" cried Tuck. "Get to the point. What you gonna do?" "It's very simple," said the man in the yellow suit, and as he said this, the smoothness of his face began to loosen a little. A faint flush crept up his neck, and the pitch of his voice lifted became a fraction higher. "Like all magnificent things, it's very simple. The wood and the spring belong to me now." He patted his breast pocket. "I have a paper here, all signed and legal to prove it, and I'm going to sell the water, you see." "You can't do that," roared Tuck. "You've got to be out of your mind." The man in the yellow suit frowned. "But I'm not going to sell it to just anybody," he protested. "Only to certain people. People who deserve it. And it will be very, very expensive. But who wouldn't give a fortune to live forever?" "I wouldn't," said Tuck grimly. "Exactly," said the man in the yellow suit. His eyes glowed. "Ignorant people like you should never have the opportunity. It should be kept for certain others. And for me, too. However, since it's already too late to keep you out, you may as well join me in what I'm going to do. You can show me where the spring is and help me to advertise. We'll set up demonstrations. You know, things that would be fatal to anyone else, but won't affect you in the least. I'll pay you for your assistance, of course. It won't take long for the word to spread. And then you can go on your way. Well, what do you say?" Jesse said dully, "Freaks. You want us to be freaks in a patent medicine show." The man in the yellow suit raised his eyebrows, and a nervous petulance came to his voice. So petulance is kind of like a pouty toddler tone. If a toddler is acting very like childish and is throwing a tantrum or being stubborn, you might say, "Oh, you're being petulant." All right, back to the story. "Of course, if the idea doesn't appeal to you," he said, blinking rapidly, "you needn't be in on it. I can find the spring and manage just as well without you." But it seemed like the gentlemanly thing to make the offer. "After all," he added, looking around at the cluttered room, "it would mean you could afford to live like people again, instead of pigs." And that was when the tension burst. All four Tucks sprang to their feet at once, while Winnie, very frightened, shrank back in her chair. Tuck cried, "You're a madman, a loony. You can't let no one know about that water. Don't you see what would happen?" "I've given you your chance," shrilled the man in the yellow suit, "and you've refused it." He seized Winnie roughly by the arm, dragged her up out of the chair. "I'll take the child and be about my business." Tuck began to rave now, his face stretched with horror. "Madman!" he shouted, and Miles and Jesse began to shout too. They crowded after as the man in the yellow suit dragged Winnie through the kitchen to the door. "No," she was screaming, for now at last she hated him. "I won't go with you, I won't." But he opened the door and pushed her out in front of him. His eyes were like blind fire points. His face was twisted. Then the shouting behind them stopped abruptly. In the midst of the sudden silence came May's voice, flat and cold. "You leave that child be," she said. Winnie stared. May was standing just outside the doorway. She held Tuck's long-forgotten shotgun by the barrel, like a club. The man in the yellow suit smiled a ghastly smile. "I can't think why you're so upset. Did you really believe you could keep that water for yourselves? Your selfishness is really quite extraordinary. And worse than that, you're stupid. You could have done what I'm about to do long ago. Now it's too late. Once Winifred drinks some of the water, she'll do just as well for my demonstrations, even better. Children are much more appealing anyways, so you may as well relax. There's nothing you can do to stop me." But he was wrong. May lifted the shotgun. Behind her, Miles gasped, "Ma, no!" But May's face was dark red. "Not Winnie," she said between clenched teeth. "You ain't gonna do a thing like that to Winnie, and you ain't gonna give out the secret." Her strong arms swung the shotgun around her head like a wheel. The man in the yellow suit jerked away, but it was too late. With a dull, cracking sound, the stock of the shotgun smashed into the back of his skull. He dropped like a tree, his face surprised, his wide open, and at that very moment, riding through the pine trees just in time to see it all, came the Tree Gap Constable. Okay, we are on chapter 20 of Tuck Everlasting. I'm looking at page 101. I can't believe that you don't remember what had just happened in chapter 19 because we left off on a huge cliffhanger and a huge pivotal moment in the story. Let's continue. Winnie was standing with her cheek pressed into Tuck's chest, her arms flung tight around him. She trembled and kept her eyes squeezed shut. She could feel Tuck's breath come and go in little gasps. It was very quiet. The tree gap constable knelt over the sprawled body of the man in the yellow suit, and then he said, "He ain't dead. Leastways, not yet." Winnie opened her eyes a crack. She could see the shotgun lying on the grass where May had dropped it. She could see May's hands, too, hanging limp, clenching, and then hanging limp again. The sun was scorching hot, and near her ear, a gnat whined. The constable stood up. "What did you hit him for?" he wheezed resentfully. "He was taking the child away," said May. Her voice was dull and exhausted. "He was taking the child against her will." At this, the constable exploded. "Ding dang it, woman! What you trying to say? Taking the child against her will? That's what you done. You kidnapped that child." Winnie let go of Tuck's waist and turned around. Her trembling had stopped. "They didn't kidnap me," she said. "I came because I wanted to." Behind her, Tuck drew his breath in sharply. "You wanted to?" echoed the constable, his eyes wide with disbelief. "You wanted to?" "That's right," said Winnie unflinchingly. "They're my friends." The constable stared at her. He scratched his chin, eyebrows high, and eased his own shotgun to the ground. Then he shrugged and looked down at the man in the yellow suit, who lay motionless in the grass, the blazing sun white on his face and hands. His eyes were closed now, but except for that, he looked more than ever like a marionette flung carelessly into a corner, arms and legs every which way, midst tangled strings. The one glance she gave him fixed his appearance forever in Winnie's mind. She turned her eyes away quickly, looking to Tuck for relief. But Tuck was not looking back at her. Instead, he was gazing at the body on the ground, leaning forward slightly, his eyebrows drawn down, his mouth a little open. It was as if he were entranced, and yes, envious, like a starving man looking through a window at a banquet. Winnie could not bear to see him like that. She reached out a hand and touched him, and it broke the spell. He blinked and took her hand, squeezing it. "Well, anyway," said the constable at last, turning businesslike, "I gotta take charge here. Get this feller into the house before he fries. I'm telling you now, if he don't make it, you're in a pickle, you people. Now, here's what we'll do. You," he said, pointing at May, "you got to come with me, and you and the little girl, you got to be locked up right away, and the little girl, I got to get her home. The rest of you, you stay here with him. Look after him. I'll get back with the doctor quick as I can. Should have brought a deputy, but I didn't expect nothing like this to happen. Ugh, well, it's too late now. All right, let's get moving." Miles said softly, "Ma, we'll get you out right away." "Sure, Ma," said Jesse. "Don't worry about me none," said May, in the same exhausted voice. "I'll make out." "Make out?" exclaimed the constable. "You people beat all. If this feller dies, you'll get the gallows. That's what you'll get. If that's what you mean by make out." Tuck's face crumpled. "The gallows?" he whispered. "Hanging?" "That's it," said the constable. "That's the law. Now let's get going." Miles and Jesse lifted the man in the yellow suit and carried him carefully into the house, but Tuck stood staring, and Winnie could guess what he was thinking. The constable swung her up onto his horse and directed May to her own saddle. But Winnie kept her eyes on Tuck. His face was very pale, the creases deeper than ever, and his eyes looked blank and sunken. She heard him whisper again, "The gallows." And then Winnie said something she had never said before, but the words were words she had sometimes heard and often longed to hear. They sounded strange on her own lips and made her sit up straighter. "Mr. Tuck," she said, "don't worry. Everything's going to be all right." The constable glanced heavenward and shook his head. Then, clutching his shotgun, he climbed up behind Winnie and turned the horse toward the path. "You first," he barked at May. "I gotta keep an eye on you. And as for you," he added grimly, speaking to Tuck, "you better hope that feller don't die on you. I'll be back soon as I can." "Everything will be all right," Tuck repeated slowly. May, slumped on the back of the fat old horse, did not respond. But Winnie leaned round the constable and looked back at Tuck. "You'll see," she said, and then she faced forward, sitting very straight. She was going home, but the thought of that was far from her mind. She watched the rump of the horse ahead, the swish of the coarse, dusty hairs as he moved his tail, and she watched the swaying, sagging back of the woman who rode him. Up through the dim pine trees they went, the constable's breath wheezing in her ears and emerging from the coolness in the green. When he saw again the wide world spread before her, shimmering with light and possibility. But the possibilities were different now. They did not point what might happen to her, but to what she herself might keep from happening. For the only thing she could think of was the clear and terrible necessity. May Tuck must never go to the gallows. Whatever happened to the man in the yellow suit, May Tuck must not be hanged, because if all they had said was true, then May Tuck, even if she were the cruelest of murderers and deserved to be put to death, May Tuck would not be able to die. Okay, we are starting chapter 21 on page 106. When last we left off, Winnie and May Tuck were going back into the main town part of Tree Gap. May is in a conundrum and Winnie is going home. Let's continue. Winnie pulled her little rocking chair up to her bedroom window and sat down. The rocking chair had been given to her when she was very small, but she still squeezed into it sometimes when no one was looking, because the rocking made her almost remember something pleasant, something soothing, that would never quite come up to the surface of her mind. And tonight, she wanted to be soothed. The constable had brought her home. They had seized her at once, flinging the gate open and swooping down on her, her mother weeping, her father speechless, hugging her to him, her grandmother babbling with excitement. There was a painful pause when the constable told them she had gone away of her own free will, but it lasted only a moment. They did not, would not believe it, and her grandmother said, "It was the elves, we heard them. They must have bewitched her." And so they had borne her into the house, and after she had taken the bath they insisted upon, they fed and petted her and refused, with little laughs and murmurs, to accept her answers to their questions. She had gone away with the Tucks because, well, she just wanted to. The Tucks had been very kind to her, had given her flapjacks, had taken her fishing. The Tucks were good and gentle people. All this would have been swept away in any case, however, this good impression of her friends which she was trying to create, when she told them what had happened to the man in the yellow suit. Had they really given him the wood in exchange for finding her? They had. Well, perhaps he wouldn't want it now. May had hit him with the shotgun. He was very sick. They received this news with mingled hope and horror, and her father said, "I suppose the wood would be ours again if that man should... That is, if he doesn't..." "You mean if he dies," Winnie had said flatly, and they had sat back, shocked. Soon after, they put her to bed with many kisses, but they peered at her anxiously over their shoulders as they tiptoed out of her bedroom, as if they sensed that she was different from now from what she had been before, as if some part of her had slipped away. Well, thought Winnie, crossing her arms on the windowsill, she was different. Things had happened to her that were hers alone and had nothing to do with them. It was the first time, and no amount of telling about it could help them understand or share what she felt. It was satisfying and lonely both at once. She rocked, gazing out at the twilight, and the soothing feeling came reliably into her bones. That feeling, it tied her to them, to her mother, her father, her grandmother, with strong threads too ancient and precious to be broken. But there were new threads now, tugging and insistent, which tied her just as firmly to the Tucks. Winnie watched the sky slide into blackness over the wood and stood outside her window. There was not the least hint of a breeze to soften the heavy August night, and then, over the treetops, on the faraway horizon, there was a flash of light. Of white. Heat lightning. Again and again it throbbed without making a sound. It was like pain, she thought, and suddenly she longed for a thunderstorm. She cradled her head in her arms and closed her eyes, and at once the image of the man in the yellow suit rose up. She could see him again, sprawled motionless on the sun-blanched grass. "He can't die," she whispered, thinking of May. "He mustn't." And then she considered his plans for the water in the spring, and Tuck's voice saying, "They'd all come running like pigs to slops." And she found herself thinking, if it's true about the spring, then he has to die, he must, and that's why she did it. Then she heard hoofbeats on the road below, a horse hurrying to the village, and not long after, there were footsteps and a knocking on the door. Winnie crept out of her room and crouched in the shadows at the top of the stairs. It was the constable. She heard him saying, "So that's that, Mr. Foster. We can't press no kidnapping charges since your little girl claims there wasn't no kidnapping. But it don't matter now, anyway. The doc just got back a few minutes ago. That feller, the one you sold your land to, he's dead. There was a pause and the murmur of other voices, and then a match striking the acrid smell of fresh cigar smoke. Acrid is like bitter. Yep, she got him good. She got him a good one, all right. He never even come to, so it's an open and shut case since I seen her do it. Eyewitness, no question about it. They'll hang her for sure. Winnie went back to her room and climbed into bed. She lay in the dark, propped up on the pillows, and stared at the lighter square of her window, at the heat lightning throbbing. It was like pain, she thought again, a dull pain on the fringes of the sky. May had killed the man in the yellow suit, and she had meant to kill him. Winnie had killed a wasp once in fear and anger, just in time to spare herself a stinging. She had slammed at the wasp with a heavy book and killed it. And then, seeing its body broken, the thin wings stilled, she had wished it were alive again. She had wept for that wasp. Was May weeping now for the man in the yellow suit? In spite of her wish to spare the world, did she wish he were alive again? There is no way of knowing. But May had done what she thought she had to do. Winnie closed her eyes to shut out the silent pulsing of the lightning. Now she would have to do something. She had no idea what, but something. May Tuck must not go to the gallows. All right, so that was chapters 19, 20, 21 of Tuck Everlasting. I wish you luck on all your questions. Stay safe, separate, and sanitize. All right, this has been another episode of Highlighters and All-Nighters with your host, Miss Huber, signing off. Okay, we are starting chapter 21 on page 106. When last we left off, Winnie and May Tuck were going back into the main town part of Tree Gap. May is in a conundrum and Winnie is going home. Let's continue. Winnie pulled her little rocking chair up to her bedroom window and sat down. The rocking chair had been given to her when she was very small, but she still squeezed into it sometimes when no one was looking because the rocking made her almost remember something pleasant, something soothing that would never quite come up to the surface of her mind. And tonight she wanted to be soothed. The constable had brought her home. They had seized her at once, flinging the gate open and swooping down on her, her mother weeping, her father speechless, hugging her to him, her grandmother babbling with excitement. There was a painful pause when the constable told them she had gone away of her own free will. But it lasted only a moment. They did not, would not believe it, and her grandmother said, "It was the elves, we heard them. They must have bewitched her." And so they had borne her into the house, and after she had taken the bath they insisted upon, they fed and petted her and refused, with little laughs and murmurs, to accept her answers to their questions. She had gone away with the Tucks because, well, she just wanted to. The Tucks had been very kind to her, had given her flapjacks, had taken her fishing. The Tucks were good and gentle people. All this would have been swept away in any case, however, this good impression of her friends which she was trying to create, when she told them what had happened to the man in the yellow suit. Had they really given him the wood in exchange for finding her? They had. Well, perhaps he wouldn't want it now. May had hit him with the shotgun. He was very sick. They received this news with mingled hope and horror, and her father said, "I suppose the wood would be ours again if that man should, that is, if he doesn't." "You mean if he dies," Winnie had said flatly, and they had sat back, shocked. Soon after, they put her to bed with many kisses, but they peered at her anxiously over their shoulders as they tiptoed out of her bedroom, as if they sensed that she was different from what she had been before, as if some part of her had slipped away. Well, thought Winnie, crossing her arms on the windowsill, she was different. Things had happened to her that were hers alone and had nothing to do with them. It was the first time, and no amount of telling about it could help them understand or share what she felt. It was satisfying and lonely both at once. She rocked, gazing out at the twilight, and the soothing feeling came reliably into her bones. That feeling, it tied her to them, to her mother, her father, her grandmother, with strong threads too ancient and precious to be broken. But there were new threads now, tugging and insistent, which tied her just as firmly to the tux. Winnie watched the sky slide into blackness over the wood and stood outside her window. There was not the least hint of a breeze to soften the heavy August night. And then, over the treetops, on the faraway horizon, there was a flash of light. Of white. Heat lightning. Again and again it throbbed without making a sound. It was like pain, she thought, and suddenly she longed for a thunderstorm. She cradled her head in her arms and closed her eyes, and at once the image of the man in the yellow suit rose up. She could see him again, sprawled motionless on the sun-blanched grass. "He can't die," she whispered, thinking of May. "He mustn't." And then she considered his plans for the water in the spring, and Tuck's voice saying, "They'd all come running like pigs to slops." And she found herself thinking, if it's true about the spring, then he has to die. He must. And that's why she did it. Then she heard hoofbeats on the road below, a horse hurrying to the village, and not long after, there were footsteps and a knocking on the door. Winnie crept out of her room and crouched in the shadows at the top of the stairs. It was the constable. She heard him saying, "So that's that, Mr. Foster. We can't press no kidnapping charges since your little girl claims there wasn't no kidnapping. But it don't matter now, anyway. The doc just got back a few minutes ago. That feller, the one you sold your land to, he's dead." There was a pause and the murmur of other voices, and then a match striking the acrid smell of fresh cigar smoke. Acrid is like bitter. "Yep, she got him a good one, all right. He never even come to, so it's an open and shut case since I seen her do it. Eyewitness, no question about it. They'll hang her for sure." Winnie went back to her room and climbed into bed. She lay in the dark, propped up on the pillows, and stared at the lighter square of her window, at the heat lightning throbbing. It was like pain, she thought again, a dull pain on the fringes of the sky. May had killed the man in the yellow suit, and she had meant to kill him. Winnie had killed a wasp once in fear and anger, just in time to spare herself a stinging. She had slammed at the wasp with a heavy book and killed it, and then, seeing its body broken, the thin wings stilled, she had wished it were alive again. She had wept for that wasp. Was May weeping now for the man in the yellow suit? In spite of her wish to spare the world, did she wish he were alive again? There is no way of knowing. But May had done what she thought she had to do. Winnie closed her eyes to shut out the silent pulsing of the lightning. Now she would have to do something. She had no idea what, but something. May Tuck must not go to the gallows. All right, so that was chapters 19, 20, 21 of Tuck Everlasting. I wish you luck on all your questions. Stay safe, separate, and sanitize. All right, this has been another episode of Highlighters and All-Nighters with your host, Miss Huber, signing off.